This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Cody and Gold back out here at Kauffman Stadium outside Gate D, getting set for opening day 2025. Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, come on by, say hello before you make your way into the stadium. And we are going to be busy in the 11 o'clock hour. We're going to hear from Ryan Lefevre. He's going to join us at 11:15. We're going to have the owner of the Royals, John Sherman, on the show at 11:30, and we will have the executive vice president and general manager, J.J. Piccolo, joining us at 11:45.
Oh, busy 11 o'clock hour, you
say? I would say we have some of the best people you want to talk to when it comes to the start of this season. A lot to get into with each one of them. So that's coming up in just a bit. We're also keeping an eye on the text line as well. We love interacting with you guys, even if we're on a remote here. We've got the text line pulled up, 913-586-7965. Real quick, away from baseball for 2 seconds. I just saw this come across in the last 20 minutes or so. We all know the Hallmark movie. We joked about that on the show. I was in the Chiefs Hallmark movie. I got a few tweets about this.
Okay.
The Buffalo Bills have announced, coming this holiday season with the Hallmark Channel, Holiday Touchdown, a
they
Bills
didn't even change the name?
Love story. They're chasing the Chiefs in Hollywood as well. They're
wow.
chasing the Chiefs in Hollywood as well.
Always the bridesmaid, you know?
Unbelievable. Look, obviously,
can't even get their own original Hallmark movie. Just got to rip off the Chiefs one, huh?
I mean, it's going to be another cheesy love story, this time in Buffalo.
I'm watching that one.
I'm going to apply to be an extra in Buffalo, too.
And you're going to fly out there to be an extra in Buffalo? You're an extra in every Hallmark-related NFL movie now?
Somebody has to walk down the street and park their Mazda in front of an old...
Well, you're not taking your Mazda out there.
I'll rent a Mazda. I'll get paid for the Mazda, too, or whatever it is. The fact that it's the exact same movie and name is unbelievable. I thought it was a joke. Multiple people tagged me on Twitter in Buffalo. Our friends up there, Mike Shope and Gene Battaglia up in Rochester in Buffalo. We've had them on the show before. We've gone on their shows before. They're like, how do we become extras? And I'm like, what are they talking about?
Well, we just applied like anyone else.
That's it. So Buffalo's just, just chasing the Chiefs on the field, off the field, Hollywood, doesn't matter.
Man, as a reminder, we will have some pillows from the premiere of that in the Cody and Gold Garage Show. So if you're looking to decorate this holiday season, and in like 7 months, 8 months, we'll have some great Hallmark. We've got several Hallmark things that can be in there. You can put your whole Mazda up, Cody and Gold Garage Show item. Gold's Mazda.
It was parked right there in downtown Independence, or Independence Square, I guess is what they call it. We'll see how that turns out. And I'll be curious to see, how identical is it? It's clearly, it's another love story, so there's only so much you can do there. But the Chiefs one was centered around that the stocking cap or whatever. What's the Bills one going to be centered around? Anyway, let's get back to some baseball here on opening day. We know John Sherman's going to join us in 25 minutes or so, but he also spoke to the media yesterday, and he was asked about kind of their offseason and said, you know what, they gave it a good try to go get a bat.
Particularly that quest for a bat, middle of the order bat. Yeah, certainly that was one of the things that we felt would really improve our team, and I think it's been written about. We gave it the old college try here. We went after a couple of people, and I think we expanded the view of investment when we thought about that. But when we didn't get that, I think if you think about, we got a lot of, you know, one of the things JJ's been great about, he's brought some people in around him. Roster construction, I think, is really a strength of JJ's. How do you put together a team capable of, you know, getting to the postseason and then ultimately advancing in the postseason? If you think about our team, the back of the bullpen was really the best way that we could add, you know, short of a really, you know, a big bat in the middle of the order, it was really adding to the back of the bullpen. So he shifted gears, and that's when we signed Carlos Estevez.
So that was John Sherman yesterday speaking about their offseason, and it was, as he said, very, very well known that they were in on multiple bats, and people wanted them to go get a bat in the outfield. And it sure seems more and more, as we saw throughout the offseason and again there, that they agreed, like, that they wanted to address an area. They came up short, and as he said, they gave it the good old college try. And ultimately, they ended up saying, let's divert those resources to the bullpen. And that's where Carlos Estevez comes in, and he will be the closer heading into today and hopefully gets an opportunity. We saw him on the cart driving by us, I don't know, what, 25, 30 minutes ago. He is a massive human being that's going to be coming out of the bullpen for this team, and it'll be interesting to see how they utilize him. Like, yesterday we gave our bold takes for the season, and I said I think he's going to have a career high in saves. The challenge with that will be, how do they use the bullpen? I think Urseg will be more of the guy that they used to put out fires, but it's probably not going to be just Carlos Estevez as the clear-cut closer, but he's getting the first crack at it today.
I obviously, and you and I both know, and we could ask JJ again if we won at 11:45, I think you and I know for a fact the Royals' outfield plan, like the one John Sherman's talking about, was the home run swing for Santander or a player like Santander. I think specifically him, but like a player like Santander. And then when that number came out, you're like, yeah, I kind of get why maybe you weren't in that ballpark. And I'm not even saying it would have been worth the risk, because you can win with Salvi, Vinny, Bobby, Jonathan India, another big trade you made in the offseason offensively, and then just have a dominant bullpen. Have a big-time bullpen. Have one of the best bullpens in the American League, or maybe one of the top 10 in baseball. They have Estevez, who can close. Urseg, who closed well for them last year. I will say, Angel Zerpa had an incredible spring training. I don't know if he's getting ready to just take some huge leap, or if it was just a good spring gold. I'll be curious. That's another guy I might ask J.J. Piccolo about. He had an incredible spring. Some of the guys who have been okay relievers for them, not like bad, not good, but okay, those guys are pushed to 4, 5, 6 spots. Daniel Lynch, let's not talk about him as a starter. We're not, like, rewriting his history. But as a guy out of the pen who can crank it up to 93, 94 if he's out of the pen, that might work too. Like, I think on paper they're already a top 5 bullpen in the American League. So, like, missing out on the bat, does it stink? Yes. Is the outfield easily the weakest unit on the roster on paper? Yeah, honestly, it's not very close. It's the weakest unit. Do I panic because of that? No, because I think they just decided we're going to go back to being a dominant bullpen again. And I honestly think that risk was worth it considering the outfield bats that were there. Unless you were going to pay Bregman or you were going to pay Santander gold, who else were you going to pay that was going to make a sizable difference, I guess, is the question.
And that's ultimately what they decided. I mean, Profar was a name that some people were interested in as well.
Been fine, but is that a huge upgrade?
Probably not.
It's an upgrade.
Probably
not. Huge upgrade.
By the way, some news. I just saw this come across for today's game. Little scratch from starting pitching matchup today. Tanner Bibee.
What?
Food poisoning.
Oh, no.
I don't know where he ate in town.
Kansas City poisoned Bibee?
The Guardians starting pitcher today, Tanner
Bibee
is food poisoning, will not start. So Ben Lively is now going to start on short notice.
So man, Do you think it was a – this is going to go down
food
as like the alarm pulling thing, you know? Someone's going to accuse Kansas City of poisoning the guy.
Who knows, man? You had some bad chicken, some bad whatever. I don't know.
You've gotten food poisoning before it happens.
I have. I always use chicken as the example because that seems to be the one where there, it could be the
issue. Well, if it's
and
undercooked.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's the example I always use. So how did that impact today's market? The Royals were minus 130 to win. They're now minus 158 to win now that Lively is scheduled to start. So a little switch. Luckily,
I was worried you were going to tell Vinny got scratched or something. I didn't know which way you were going to go.
Vinny's the DH. There's no change with that lineup, but Bibee not pitching today. I'm assuming he'll be good to go later on in the series by Saturday or something. But, you know, it depends, man. Food poisoning, a little 24-hour thing. That sucks for him.
I guess he'll probably start Saturday now, just assuming
maybe he has some Chipino, Cody. For those that have listened to the show
that
for a while, maybe he had some bad
food
Chipino.
Poisoning.
It's a bad Chipino.
Will
do
you
that
come
for
to my
you.
House if I make Chipino?
No, because I can't eat that. That is like I'm going to have an allergic.
You can have scallops. You just can't have shellfish, right?
Yeah.
So, like, can you have mussels? Are you sure you can't have shellfish, or you just think you can't have shrimp?
I
want you to get a skin test.
I used to eat shrimp all the time. I loved shrimp. One of my favorite foods. It still bugs me to this day that I cannot eat it.
I think you should get a scratch test. Let's be sure.
And I cannot have shellfish, I'm pretty sure. It's shrimp for sure, and I think it's shellfish. And
you're just avoiding food you might be able to eat.
As far down deep in the ocean as I went before with shrimp anyway, and now you're asking me to go further deep.
I'm just asking to eat a mussel.
I think I know what this is about. I think Cody wants to you want to redeem yourself with the Chipino.
Why don't you and your wife go have, just like our old producer did.
Do you guys like seafood?
I do. I don't know if my wife is allergic to Chipino because she's allergic to crawfish, and there's something else that we found out a couple years ago she's allergic to.
You got to find out which ones, and then we'll find out. I'll be careful.
Some bad Chipino.
I'll plan it around you.
Some bad Chipino, a little food poisoning, it'll get you. You know, I know you think it wasn't that. I'm not sure. You know, we got to find out. I don't know what the Guardians had for dinner last night or anything like that. Something was up for Bobby,
yeah,
though.
You know, there's always a risk. Either way, that's a little bit interesting. We can talk about that in just a minute.
There is a less than 1% chance I will ever have Chipino, especially from you.
Less than 1% from me?
Especially
from
you.
Drew's
even skeptical. I think you should invite his wife and get a complete
redo. Drew, I think
redo.
You guys should come over, but I need your wife's approval first. I homemade bread. Dude, I bought saffron. I went out of my way. This was a fine quality meal. It took me all day. I went to a fresh seafood market down on like the east side of Kansas City. I felt at home.
You sure that wasn't? You sure that was?
The problem was, as I blamed the Chipino, but my kids were sick before and they never ate the Chipino.
Yeah.
My kids ended up sick too. What's their explanation? Just as a hint, my kids were like two and four at that time. They didn't eat Chipino.
That's the scoop of the day I want. Somebody on the Cleveland Guardians beat, I want to know what type of food. We don't have to say the restaurant. I want to know what type of food Bibee had that food poisoning. I just want to know. What do you know? Hopefully it wasn't barbecue or anything like that. I'm hoping you got adventurous with some seafood and it was some bad seafood.
We're going to see the quote out eventually, I'm sure, at least from that side. So we'll find out. We'll find out whether or not. But, yeah, the Guardians starting pitcher, late scratch today due to food poisoning. So it'll be Cole Reagans versus Ben Lively for the Guardians instead today, and we'll figure out, you know, exactly how much impact that has in the game. We'll find out here in about, 4 or 5 hours? And 5 hours at least on this end, but the odds market did shift a little bit, as you pointed
Royals
out.
Royals were minus 130, they're now minus 158
not
or
surprising.
So, depending on the sports book. We are about to be joined by Ryan Lefevre. I think this might be year 27. I think this could be year 27, and maybe I'm off by a year. Of course, you can catch him on FanDuel Sports Network today and throughout the season at times right here on 96.5 The Fan. Am I right or am I off by a year? Is this year 27?
It's year 27.
Okay.
And
nailed it.
I've probably said this too many times, but I turned 54 this year. So if I'm still around at the end of the season, I will have spent half of my life as a Royals broadcaster.
Wow. Did you have any moment at the very beginning where you're like, man, did I make the right choice here? Go to the right. Was there like 6 months in? Because, you know, fans never like the new guy.
Yeah.
It always goes like awkward at the beginning. They're like, no, it's not the way I liked it sounded before or whatever else. We deal with that in radio all the time.
Well, I was sitting in Fred White's chair, who'd been here for 25 years and was here during the glory years in the 70s and the 80s. And I was just some 28-year-old from the Minnesota Twins, and I had no ties to the area at all. So I knew it was going to be difficult, and Fortunately, there was no such thing as social media back then. So
no, see, that helps.
People who hated me had fewer ways to tell me that they hated me. But I got letters. There were letters to the
letters?
Editor. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
And, you know, whenever you get a letter and there's no return address to it, you know this is not going to be good. But I tried to respond as best as I could. But, yeah,
your late 20s, that's a tough time to just be taking a lot of criticism.
Yeah. At least, when I started with the Twins, at least I'd been to the University of Minnesota and I played baseball there. I mean, you know, I wasn't a Minnesotan, but they kind of saw me sort of as one of their own, but not here. And but you know what? To be honest, when I look back on it now, guys, people were fair. They gave me a fair chance. Denny was great to me. I owe Denny everything. I mean, the credibility that he gave me in the early years. I mean, I wouldn't be here talking to you right now if Denny and I didn't hit it off the way that we did right away.
I was looking back, like, it's so funny. It's like the Kansas City thing. It's like, just mention barbecue or jazz music. If you're in Minnesota, just mention Peanuts, you know, like Prince, and you're pretty much good, right? You just got to figure out the things that endear you to the city.
Yeah, the lakes, mosquitoes. You know, you start talking about mosquitoes in Minnesota, they're like, oh, you know,
he's been around here a little while.
He's one of us. Yeah, exactly.
What do you think about the starting pitcher being out for the Guardians today? Bit of a shift here early?
Yeah, that's always a fascinating thing because the initial response is, okay, we don't have to face Tanner Bibee. But there's something about a player who was not expected to play. And now this is opening day, so it's different. But no player or pitcher would admit this. But I think there's this almost immediate sense of, you know what? Nobody's expecting anything
True.
Of me today. So I'm just going to go out there and do my best. I didn't get a whole lot of time to prepare. And more times than not, that guy does pretty good because of that. Just going out there, I'm just going to do the best that I can today.
Nobody's going to blame me if it doesn't go well.
Exactly,
you know?
Exactly. And we had Ben Lively here for a short period of time.
Yeah, we did.
And he had a really good year for them last year. You know, anytime a team has a unexpected good year, as Cleveland did last year. I mean, I don't think anyone figured they were going to win the division the way that they did. That usually means you have players who had unexpected good years. And Ben Lively was one of those guys for the Guardians.
The Royals seem to have real expectations, though, this year. I know last year in this very time we were sitting here, we were talking about how different the opening day roster was compared to the year prior. This go around, there's a couple new pieces, but the majority of this team is back in the same spot. This year, we talked to fans. I know you talked to fans. It feels like it's not just about making the playoffs. People are looking at that division crown.
Yeah, and for this generation of fans, we know two things, the World Series and winning the World Series. I mean, because in 14 and 15, you know, it had been 29 years since the Royals had been to the postseason, and we went to back-to-back World Series. So it was a little strange to be bumped out in the division series because, you know, it had been so long. I mean, well, let's see, how far do you have to go? You have to go back before 1985 when the Royals were eliminated.
That's a pretty standard way people go to the postseason
that's
sometimes.
Right. So I think while it ended shorter than we wanted to, it was still a extremely successful season, and it gave them a taste. You know, there's a lot of guys on this team that have won before somewhere else, but this group has never won together. So they got a taste of it. They know what it takes to get there, and they're hungry because the season finished quicker than they wanted to. You know, and it's if there's one thing that is frustrating about the way the postseason ended, the Yankees beat the Royals 3 games by 4 runs.
I know.
It's not like the Yankees came in and just bludgeoned the Royals and, hey, we're just lucky to be here. I mean, those were all winnable games. The Yankees played much better than in the ALCS against Cleveland than they did against the Royals. And I remember after the Royals won game 2 in New York, there were a lot of nervous people in New York that they were going to come here and we were going to win this series. They were not playing with a whole lot of confidence, but you know, they pitched well. Giancarlo Stanton got hot. And so anyway, all that being said, that these guys, it shouldn't be a false sense of motivation. They should really feel like they can compete with the best teams in the playoffs.
Can the offense get better? So, like, there's always the players that are like, okay, do MJ's swing fixes help? Can Massey stay healthy? You know, like, there's always the players that, like, there's a little more unknown about. Mm-hmm. Can the offense get better simply just because there'll be guys in front of the guys who are good at producing runs?
The offense,
like, India's on base, and now all the guys who are already good at being RBI guys, Vinny, Bobby, and Salvi, can just put more runs in.
The offense has to be better. Now, if you look at the stats, the Royals were sixth in the league in runs per game. That's pretty good. When Vinny went down, they were third in the American League in runs per game. And you think, wow, what a great lineup. No.
It was all coming from
those
three.
Bobby, Vinny, and Salvi carried that offense. And just about everybody else in that lineup, outside of Massey when he was healthy, just about everyone in that lineup had a down year. So to go in, and I'm going to say Vinny drove in 100 runs. I mean, he drove in 97 runs in 5 months. I mean, he would have driven in 100 runs. So let's say Vinny drove in 100 runs. I don't think you can go into the season this year expecting all three of those guys to drive in 100 runs again. Other guys are going to have to pick up the slack. Other guys, spots 5 through 9 are going to have to get on base more often, move runners more often, drive runs more often. Now, if all three of those guys drive in 100 runs again, and the other six are good, then they're going to be in really good shape. But those three guys, you can't expect them to just carry the offense again like they did last year.
We're talking to Ryan LaFever here on 96.5 The Fan. Cody asked you a little bit there in his question about MJ. I heard you with CDOT earlier on in the week as well. The biggest swing player for individually for that player and also for the season, I think you said MJ Melendez, if I'm not mistaken, was your answer. I agree with you. We also brought up maybe even Chris Bubich. Who do you think on the pitching side and on the hitting side could be the big swing for maybe in their careers too?
How about I give you a few? I don't know if I've narrowed it down to one, but I agree with Chris Bubich. I agree with MJ Melendez. And then I will also add in Kyle Isbell and Michael Garcia. Their ability to get on base more in the number 9 spot is going to help Jonathan India in the number 1 spot when the lineup turns around, which then helps Bobby, which helps Vinny, which helps Salvi, so on and so forth. And I think for Isbell and Garcia and Melendez, and I don't want to sound like I'm oversimplifying this, but I think it's as much of a mindset as it is changing their swings. What Vinny did last year showed that you don't have to have an enormous amount of home runs. You don't have to have a huge OPS. You don't have to win a batting title. You can just find ways to drive in runs.
Sac fly king last year.
Sac flies, ground balls, broken bats, and that's Vinny's willingness to drive in a run. And it seems like we're getting out of an era where players thought, I'm going to go up there and find a pitch that I can crush. And it works in the minor leagues, and you can hit 30 or 40 home runs in the minor leagues and drive in a bunch of runs against single A and double A and sometimes triple A pitchers. But when you're facing Tarek Skubal, then there's a runner at third base with one out in a tie game, I don't know if you want to go up there thinking, I'm going to find a pitch that I'm going to hit into the 10th row.
Not off Skubal.
You got to find a way when you're facing major league pitching. How do I drive in runs? Vinny has that figured out at a very young age. And so I don't know if it's, I mean, I'm sure MJ's mechanics are going to help him. It looked good in spring training. I think Michael Garcia going back to the opposite field again, and I saw that in spring training. Kyle Isbell's ability to think about getting on base and not necessarily driving the ball, and no fault of his, but when you're a number 9 hitter, they're going to pitch to you. A number 9 hitter can't be a patient hitter. You're going to be 0-1, 0-2 all day long. I think his willingness to accept that role and try and get on base, that's mindset stuff. That's not swing, hand, stride, front hip, front shoulder. And Vinny has a mindset as a run producer that's well beyond his years. That's not an accident that he drove in 97 runs in 5 months.
Who do you think, by the way, out of the Central, is it today? Who's the team you think stands in the way the most for the Royals this year? Is the toughest challenger for the Royals this year? We both think the Royals did more than any other team in the division to improve their team this offseason. So is it the winner last year, the Guardians, Twins? Who do you like?
Well, I think you just can't count out Cleveland. They just have a knack of, yeah. I mean, they've done a lot of winning.
They lost Bieber last year, and I'm like, no way.
Yeah.
That team's done. And then they won the division.
They just continue to win. I mean, they know how to win. I think last year was the third straight year that they were the youngest team in the major leagues, and they've gone to the playoffs 2 of the last 3 years. They
wow.
just
That's crazy.
And are they better at finding players and developing players? I don't know. But when you have a winning culture and you go to the ballpark and you expect to win, that's a big part of the equation. There's no statistic for that, but that's a real thing. And then I think you have to look at Detroit. Detroit's saying all the things that the Royals are saying right now. You know, they came back from the dead. They had a winning season. They ended up in the postseason. They got a taste of it. I think the Tigers...
They got pitching.
The Tigers feel about their season the way we feel about our season.
I just like, I'm between Jobe and Scooble, it's like, I fear their pitching. There are problems on their roster, but I fear their pitching for sure.
Ryan LaFever, you're going to be on FanDuel Sports Network, new network, same network, new name and everything. For
blue logo.
Blue That's logo.
Nice. They get you some new polos?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, can we get some old ones for our Cody Gold Garage
we'll
sale?
Take the old Bally ones.
The old Bally ones?
Yeah, yeah, you know, game used. Yeah. Game used if you wore it, you know?
Yeah, so it doesn't really change much for us in the booth, but I think it's going to be good for the viewers because there are more ways to watch the Royals on television than in the history of this franchise. I mean, we're back on over-the-air television again for select amount of games. We're still on all the cable providers. We're still on all the satellite providers, with the exception of one, I believe. And if streaming's your thing, and more streaming is your thing, there are easy ways to get it, affordable ways to get it. I think I saw that it's if you get the season pass either at MLB.com, FanDuel Sports Network, the direct-to-consumer app, or if you get it through Amazon Prime, you're paying 65 cents a game to get 154 Royals games. So we're still in a transition period where people are getting used to streaming in just different ways. I'm old enough now, I remember when the shift went to cable and everyone went, oh, you can't do that. People don't have cable television. Well, that didn't last for very long. But there are more ways to watch the Royals now than ever before.
Well, have a great call. It's good to have you on the Royals games once again.
I'm outranked by your next guest, I think. So
yeah, we're going to get a quick break. We're
going to
get
a nine
quick
layers.
So. We're going to get a quick break. And when we come back, we will be joined by Royals Chairman and CEO John Sherman right here on 96.5 The Fan. Back here on 96.5 The Fan, it's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, getting set for Royals opening day right outside Gate D. Counting down, getting closer and closer. We appreciate Ryan LaFever for joining us. We're going to be joined by Royals General Manager and Executive Vice President J.J. Piccolo coming up in about 10 or 15 minutes or so. But we are honored to have the Royals Chairman and CEO John Sherman join us right outside Gate D and getting set for another opening day for you. We were talking a little bit off air. Just this is one of the nicer opening days we've had in Kansas City.
It is, absolutely. And like we said, it could go either way. So looks like it's going to be a great day out here, hopefully on the field as well.
That's what we're looking for, right? You had mentioned when you had bought the team, we always reference a quote, which is like, I kind of want to know what playoff baseball is like, right? And, well, like, we took that to heart. Like, I've been in we're both Kansas Cityans.
Right.
So we spent a lot of years just being like, I would take just a playoff berth. Not that 14 and 15 were magical, but we would do that. When do you start getting greedier? You're like, okay, I remember playoff baseball. I'm greedier on the other end of this now.
Well, we're there, you know. but you know, I think we're humble about it. But, you know, more importantly than how I feel, I would say the players, the guys in the clubhouse, I would say last year, you know, we got better. We thought we could compete, that we were hopeful we'd get a spot, and we eked in by one game. Right? I would say the feeling this year and surprise is it's just a professional group, and they expect to be there this year.
Last year, what were your expectations going into the year? Because this year, you're right. Like, was it just like, I hope that we're ready to be as competitive
hope,
as I thought?
But it was, you just don't know, right? You just don't know. Because we lost 106 games, no matter how you slice it, right? And we knew JJ had improved the rotation. We brought in some veterans. We had some maturation among our young guys. You know, Bobby keeps moving. That's helpful. So I thought we could compete. And we got off to a pretty good start. But, you know, it wasn't an easy finish, right? We stumbled in September, you know, when Vinny got hurt. We stumbled again, I think. But I will give JJ credit for, I don't think anybody was chasing a spot harder than him and us. You know, when he went out and he gets Tommy Pham and Robbie Grossman, Yuli Gurriel. Of course, Urshag at the deadline was a big deal. Hunter Harvey he's going to help us this year, but it didn't work. All those guys helped us get into the dance, right? And we got in by one game. So we chased it pretty hard.
You had mentioned, I think, in your press availability yesterday, you're like, the thing you like the best about JJ is his ability to build a team. Is that what you liked about him when you hired him? Or is that something you, like, continue to find out now? Like, you know, when you decided to promote him, was it about that, the team-building part, or are you finding out more and more that that's the thing you like the best about him?
Well, I would say I thought he was prepared for this role, his background, and then his openness to change, right? He's a curious person. He's trying to get better every day. But I don't know that I would have said he was as good as what I'd call roster construction is what we're seeing. But he's also brought some people outside that he knew were skilled in those areas. And that's really what JJ's done, right? He recognizes that he has a good background, but he needs to, you know, when he brought in Q, he brought in Paul Hoover, he brought in Brian Sweeney from Cleveland, Zach Bove. All these guys are bringing different perspectives that make the team better. And that's what's impressive about JJ. And he's still doing it today. We're finding new ways to get better.
We're talking to the chairman and CEO of the Royals, John Sherman, here on 96.5 The Fan. Yesterday you also spoke about how close, how aggressive you were to maybe try to go get a bat.
Yeah.
And I think you phrased it, the good college try that you guys gave,
right,
I think is
right.
The words that you used, the phrase
right.
You used yesterday.
Right.
How close did you feel you guys were to going and getting that bat? I know you pivoted to the bullpen, and that's why Carlos Estevez is here.
Yeah, I think we were close. I think in the one that got written about, and there were others. But I think JJ went after it hard for a team like ours. I don't think he wanted to go as many years on that one particular bat. But I think we gave that a good try, and then when it was clear that, you know, we picked up Mark Kanha recently here. That's a different kind of add, but it does add value to the team. But shifting, and we talked about roster construction. We have a roster simulator now that I don't think we had 5 years ago. I know we didn't have it 5 years ago, where you can input what will make you better, right, in terms of wins, runs saved, runs produced, and a back end of the bullpen guy, and there were two other people along with Carlos that we looked at there, but that was really the best way to make this team better, back end of the bullpen. And now we got power back there with Harvey and Hershey again, and Carlos and Zerpa. Zerpa's a guy that I think
he had a great spring,
and I thought he proved his mettle against Baltimore too, right? Never been in a playoff game. That was not an easy place, and in fact, that I think those two games in Baltimore, we added that to our DNA, particularly the pitchers. I mean, you had all four pitchers in game one, Cole, Sam Long, Zerpa, and Ursig, and maybe Bubich. I can't remember
yeah.
if Bubich got it. None of those guys had ever pitched in a playoff game, right? And they all met the moment. And that's, I think that's a big deal for feeling that we're going to be better this year.
When you mentioned, like, the bullpen stuff, was the on-base stuff a big conversation you guys had? You target India. Canna
gets on base too,
Like, so when you start looking at those, was on base a big part of the conversation?
Well,
because you guys have some guys who can bop a little.
No doubt that was, you know, up front, right? We needed a leadoff. If Bobby Witt, you probably know this, came to the plate 433 times with nobody on base. I think that was the most in the majors. Still drove in 109 runs, right? What's he going to do if we got more guys on base in front of him, right?
Same with Salvi and Vinny, who drove in 100 each themselves.
Same thing. Well, you know, Jonathan can set the table, and if you've been watching him in the spring, really good at bats. I think he was fourth in the league last year in walks. He's one of the lowest chase rates in baseball, 357 lifetime on base, and then Kana's 360-ish too, right? So those are some skills that we haven't had. And then, you know, Bobby's on base is going to get better as he gets even better.
And when they stop pitching to him. You know,
yeah,
this works.
He's aggressive.
I don't know why I'd pitch to him right now if I were a lot of other teams. You know, he's just so good.
Yeah, but he keeps finding a way to, you know. There's sometimes you have to pitch to him, right? And having a guy like India in front of him and Vinny behind him, that helps him too.
As we're talking to you, we got John Sherman with us. Obviously, the questions everybody has out there still is about the future of Royals baseball in this town.
Right.
And you spoke a little bit about this yesterday.
Right.
For Royals fans that are listening, what would you tell them for those wondering, hey, when is there going to be some sort of announcement? When will you guys
have a
potential site in the future of the Royals in Kansas City?
Yeah, I think, well, the future of the Royals in Kansas City is what I'm working on every day. That's what all this is about, right? It's about winning baseball. It's about securing the future in Kansas City and to be a good citizen in this community. But first of all, I would just say I would tell the fans this is a generational decision, something we're taking very seriously. I want to be strategic about it, and it's our objective to be ready to talk about that the middle of the calendar year, so in that June-July period.
The hope being that you guys would have like a full decision by then, I guess, like
that's
site, location.
Okay. That's the hope, that we would have a full decision by then.
Is it hard to like go back and forth and look at the options now? Because you've mentioned Kansas and Missouri on both sides. Is it hard now to try to figure out like how I reshape my dream or continue that? Because you've mentioned how much you love downtown baseball, and now obviously you consider both. Is it hard to like reshape what maybe your initial thought was and trying to decide between two options? It could still include downtown.
I think you have to be open-minded, right? And I think this is about the region. This is about, look, certainly downtown will work, but I think more importantly, it needs to be in an area of high density where we can build a world-class facility that ensures our competitiveness, but also we can do some things around it that create energy and vibrancy and economic activity, not just 81 nights a year, but 365 days a year.
When you look at the rest of this team, do you do the same stuff we do? You're a big baseball fan. You say you just love watching the game. So is it like you get a hot dog, you predict how many wins the team's going to have yourself?
I don't do that.
Internal, you get the internal projection, you know? You don't have to do
right,
that like us.
Right, right, right.
Like, which level of, what are the fandom things you stick to, you know?
Well, I think I'm going with Q's mantra. We show up every day to win. And we, and this year, we're not going to go 162-0. But the mindset this year is that we show up every day to win. And today, you know, I think it's great to play a division foe. You always get their best pitcher when we're putting our ace out there as well. It's always a tough game, but it's one of 162, right? And it's a long campaign. But I think we got a shot to win this division, and it'd be great to start today.
Okay, and throughout the season, too, you guys are not only going to honor a 40th anniversary of the 85 team, you
that'll
got the 10-year anniversary.
That'll
I know
fun.
A couple representatives throwing out the first pitch today. So
no, that'll be fun. And, you know, you asked what I do every day. Look, this is – I don't know if you guys do this, but I come here to the game, home games. I come here and watch. I listen to Vern on the way home, and that's all. Sometimes that's good. Sometimes that's good. But it's all. The important thing is fandom, right? Passion, right? Whether it's good or bad, silence is what you should worry
sure.
about. And then I'll go home sometimes, and I'll turn on the replay on Bally's or now FanDuel. And my wife will come downstairs and said, you know, you need to go to the hospital, John. This is the same game that we just attended. I said, well, I want to see it from a different perspective.
Right? It is different. It's different than watching it like, you know, we've been fortunate enough on this show to go to a couple of different, like, Chiefs Super Bowls. And it's like watching it on in person is a different experience than watching it on television.
I like both. I love the excitement of being with fans and the energy of the stadium. But I also like to watch a game. You get a different perspective.
John Sherman, Royals Chairman and CEO. We appreciate the time. Thanks for stopping by. Enjoy opening day.
Appreciate it. You guys, too. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. And coming up in just a couple of minutes, we're expected to have the General Manager and Executive Vice President of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Piccolo. I see him walking by right now. We're going to have him. We'll talk some more baseball with him. But great to catch up with the Chairman and CEO of the Kansas City Royals about not only this baseball team, but obviously just a couple thoughts there on where things are at. He says by the middle of the year when it comes to a site selection, you followed up and said, like have everything's like figured out at that point in time? He said, that's the hope.
Yeah, like,
that's the
hope. You're telling us we're going here, you know, we got financing, all that stuff.
And look, it'll be, we're a week or so away from it being a year since that failed stadium vote. And you and I, we talked before the show. Today's more about opening day, so we didn't want to focus too much on stadium stuff today because I think everybody's just excited for this baseball team. We can talk some more stadium stuff tomorrow on the show as well. But I definitely, you know, he had some comments yesterday. We definitely wanted to ask him again today about where things are at. And you know, we know downtown baseball was always a thought. But, yeah, he said you have to be a little more open-minded now. And I think if he acknowledged, like he did yesterday, that, yeah, they're looking at sites on both sides of the state line.
I think what he's announcing is, well, what are you saying there? Sure, he's like, we know downtown baseball works. There's no question there. If that's where we end up, we're good. Yeah. That's fine. Everything's squared away there. The question is, you know, can it work somewhere else? They just want to be somewhere population dense. So, like, what they're telling you is, like, I think they're saying they don't want to go out to the Legends, right? They want to be in a more neighborhoody area if it's going to be on the Kansas side, Gold. Maybe a more established area if it's going to be on the Kansas side. And I can't blame them for that. That makes a lot of sense. But, like, yeah, I do think they have to kind of reshape their dream. Their dream was build an entire ballpark village with their stadium downtown, and it looks like this.
I mean, I still think that can happen, though, man.
It could, but they can't just that's the only plan.
No, you know? No, but I still think that's in play. You know, it'll be interesting too because he mentioned, you know, just how he handles opening day and stuff. We know, of course, like most years, the mayor will also be here at the stadium today and things like that. But I. June and July now. I mean, that's kind of the new. We'll see if that actually happens. I hope it does. I'm sure they do as well. June and July now. If you're like wondering how much longer to find out the site, to find out what the stadium plan could be, and obviously the financing and everything, the new deadline, it sure sounds like now, is June and July, which we've known in the last couple of days, or certainly yesterday with some of the comments as well.
Yeah, it's totally fine. It's understandable that would be the case, but like, it has been like, you know, moving slow, I guess, at least on that end. And I think that what he's saying is, like, it's a massive, like, this is one of the biggest things the city will do, right? Right? Build an airport, build a stadium.
Massive projects.
And it changes It changes the dynamics of a city. So, like, all of that. Like, I'm not saying rush into this decision. I certainly don't want that. But, like, also, you know, like, at some point, we're all kind of hoping to find out.
No question about that. As we continue broadcasting live outside Gate D at Kauffman Stadium, getting set for opening day here, 2025. We'll get back into some more specifics a little bit later on in the show as well on that. But we're excited to have the Executive Vice President, General Manager of the Kansas City Royals, J.J. Piccolo, joining us. Another opening day. This one, they're, you know, we'll have to deal with weather being an issue or anything like that. It's great to see you. Great to see you for another opening day.
Opening days are all good, no matter what. Whether it's, you'd rather have 80 degrees and a little bit of sun than not, but opening days are always fun.
You got the spring training tan.
I do. I actually got tan really fast this year. I don't know what
your
that
body's
about,
adjusting
but,
to.
Yeah,
it.
I guess, but I held it, so that's good. It'll disappear here in a month.
John Sherman was very complimentary of your roster construction, specifically yesterday. He talked about it on our show here just a few minutes ago. How do you feel about like how you guys approach this offseason? Last year, you changed like 80% of the roster from the year before. This year, it was just like a handful of things that you did to the roster. Like, how do you feel about, like, now that you're maybe getting close to first pitch, how do you feel about the way you guys kind of went about it this offseason?
Really good. Every offseason brings something different. Going from 23 to 24, you know, our results told us we need to make some change. This year was different. This year was more specific. You know, the main thing was the leadoff hitter, and we were able to get Jonathan India. Then it was, you know, try to, you know, make sure, and actually Michael Wacha helped us out because he signed early, but make sure our starting pitching still has depth. We tried, you know, to add another bat to the lineup, didn't quite, you know, get it done. But then we also were able to address the bullpen, which, you know, as we've witnessed here, and I think we were sort of a trendsetter, if you have a lockdown bullpen in the last, you know, the seventh through the ninth, you got a pretty good chance to win. So that was the approach we took. And, you know, we got guys in this team that I think will take steps forward, and we're in a pretty good spot.
How close do those conversations go with the bat? I won't make you name names. I'm not even sure if you're allowed to technically. Yeah. Via that, we know some of the names that were out there that maybe you guys were interested in. Those conversations get pretty deep, or did you have to kind of alter quick? How did those go?
They were deep. At one point, I thought we were going to land somebody that would have been really good for our lineup. It didn't work out, but we were involved, and that's a credit to John and the way he runs this club. He sees a window of opportunity right now where we can compete in the Central, and ultimately that's what we're trying to do, is win the Central every year. But he sees a window of opportunity with the guys that we have, the stability we have, that this is a time to move forward. So he gave us the okay to get involved with some of the free agent talks and, you know, some of the trade talks as well that would have helped us. But, you know, that's in the past now. We can't do anything about that. But, you know, take the guys that we have and let's make this the best team we can.
In the organization, I mean, you can sense it from fans as well. We've talked about all morning long, like real expectation, not just to have some hope and make the playoffs. You guys obviously did that last year, but the bar, you guys have raised the bar, right? And for this fan base too, and thinking about winning this division, how has that changed maybe even your feel walking into the building today?
Yeah, the team is more stable right now than it was last year. Last year, I would categorize it as optimism. You know, there was optimism, a lot of new faces. Bobby going into his third year. Salvi always brings excitement. This year, there's a confidence that not only do we believe we've done it or can do it, but we've done it. You know, we've gotten to the playoffs. Though I'll tell you, though, we came up short. You know, once we reached a certain point in the season, it was about making the playoffs. But once you get into the playoffs, it was about going deep into the playoffs and winning a World Series. So nobody was satisfied with the year last year, which I think is a credit to Q with the way he runs the club. Very, you know, you mentioned you used the word expectations. There are expectations, but we have to sort of temper that with, you know, we don't have to go from, you know, we don't have to win 30 more games this year.
Right.
You know,
seven would be nice.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. You know, that next mark for us might be 90, 92 wins. But for those things to happen, you know, things got to go right this year. You got to stay healthy. Last year, we were extremely healthy. And, you know, we have to expect that we're going to have bumps in the road this year. And who's going to get a chance to step up and do something? A lot like our bullpen did last August and September. They're outstanding. You know, and guys got opportunities. So when you have guys in the minor leagues that get an opportunity, that's a great thing. But, you know, putting the ball in play with runners in scoring position, we're really good at that. We have to maintain that. You know, throwing strikes with our pitching staff. I think our bullpen's a lot different. You know, it's deeper. It's more power. The four guys from Zerpa to Harvey to Irsay to the Estevez. Those four guys are very different than the four we had last year. So there are things that are moving us in the right direction, but the reality is we got to play 162 games and we got to weather the storms that are going to come. It's not going to be all, you know, sunshine and rainbows for us. You know, it's a long year and it's a tough year.
You mentioned injuries and avoiding those. Looks like you guys avoided maybe a scare right out of the gate. Vinny's in the lineup today. Yep. He's going to DH, but just where is your feeling on him right now?
Good. You know, watching him work out yesterday, I thought he was going to walk in the office at the end and say, I want to play first base. We had a pretty good idea. If you just look at Vinny's track record, I mean, he beat all odds last year with the broken hand and getting back for the playoffs. He was the only one to believe that. You know, he told us, I'll be ready for the playoffs, and he
and
was.
You're like, sure, Vinny.
Yeah. My mind was, you know, if we can get deep into the playoffs, maybe get into the, you know, the league championship series, then we'd have an opportunity to get him back in the lineup. But, you know, knowing his history, knowing how tough he is, knowing that he was going to do the right thing over these really 4 days he had, because he had Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday to get ready for today, I expected him to be in the lineup. But watching him move around yesterday, I thought he's going to want to play first base, which we have to sort of – that's where we got to step in and say, hey, this isn't smart for you. This is about, you know, this is about the long haul. We like to say it's about the war, not the battle. Today's a battle. The season's a war. You know, we got to get through the entire season, and having been on the field is really important.
I thought, you know, it stinks for, like, the injury stuff, because, like, initially you're fearful, because last year Vinny was healthy.
Yeah.
He was healthy the whole year. He was playing every day. He was consistently there. And then a freak injury, you know, like, that always feels like it must be, like, mentally kind of tough, where you're like, you didn't do anything wrong. It's not that you didn't get your body prepared. It wasn't things like that. It, you know, like, to have that kind of – because, like, the shoulder was the thing before.
Yeah.
But once he had that surgically fixed, he hasn't had a problem with that anymore,
no,
right? We haven't seen any more
that's well
issues.
Behind him. You know, and that was something, a discussion I had with Vinny, because Vinny's pretty hard on himself. You know, as fun-loving as he can be and outgoing, he's pretty hard on himself. And he was mad that he got hurt. And it's like, hey, Vinny, that is a freak injury. That's not something we worry about. Now, this soft tissue injury with our medical staff, we'll figure out a way to get him through. It's actually similar to Gurriel. When we got Gurriel last year, he didn't have his hamstring was not 100%. But by the time we got to the end of September, our medical staff did a great job in getting him through early September, late September, and then he was healthy in the playoffs. That was sort of how we categorized this one, and we just got to be smart about how we use him.
What about how the spring training went from the let's tinker in the outfield perspective? You guys were finding out if Massey could play left, finding out if India could play left, finding out if Mike Hill could play center. We know today it'll be Massey at second, India at third. I'm assuming that's going to be most of the time for you. Will we see any of those guys in the outfield, Mikel Garcia, India, or Massey?
Yeah, you will. You know, and the thing that we don't think about a lot that I would, you know, encourage our fans to think about is, you know, because we pinch hit, you know, so now when you pinch hit, you know, positionally you got to line up. So you might see more of one guy playing two positions than we've seen in the past. So you might see Michael start second, go to left. You might see India start third and go to left. You still may see one of them start a game and left. You may see Mikel come into a game. Today he's not starting, which was a tough one for us because we believe in Mikel. But it speaks to the depth of our lineup to not have him in there. But it's very likely he's coming in at some point today. He's going to play. So you're going to see him, whether it's a third base, second base, center field. He's going to move around. The thing that we have going for us is all three of those guys have said – over and over again, whatever we need to do for the team. And that's really, really good to hear. And that, I think that speaks to the maturity of the team. It's not about me. It's not about establishing myself. It's about the team. And that's a big difference right now than what we were dealing with 2 years ago.
We're talking to J.J. Boccolo here on 96.5 The Fan. I think a few weeks back we had you on the show. We talked about MJ Melendez and how he was very receptive to changing the stance and changing the swing. And a lot of fans are looking at him as maybe a huge swing guy for you guys. If he gets to a level that people have hoped, and I'm sure you guys have hoped he gets to, how big of a season is this for him, for your entire team's success?
Well, I think right now we have a solid offense. You know, we're still going to have to create runs and move runners and do all those things. If MJ's doing what we believe he's capable, if Mikel does what he's capable of doing, if Izzy's able to do things that we believe he can do, you know, you put those guys into the mix. And Hunter Renfro, I mean, he's hit 25 home runs, I think, five times in his career. We don't need him to hit 25, but if he can hit 20 for us, that may be the difference between us having a solid offense and a really good offense. And really what we're thinking about – is trying to take pressure off of Bobby, Vinny, and Sal to do everything. You know, that's not a healthy way to go. That's not sustainable, in our opinion. Adding Jonathan certainly helps that, and I think Michael Massey really evolved into a professional hitter last year. So you'll see him at the five hole probably pretty frequently here to start the season. But if those other guys do what they're certainly capable of doing, we may have a really good offense.
I think Renfro's been around the league long enough. I don't think there's, like, questions about that. But, like, MJ, I think Ryan Lefevre actually pointed out is a really good point where with him or some of the other guys in the lineup, can they learn things from Vinny? Not like you're the same hitter, but, like, just get a run home. Figure out how to score and produce runs is what we're talking about. Vinny's great at producing a run for you.
Yeah.
Can guys like MJ who – I think his home runs came a lot of solo shots, or his hits didn't. He had 44 RBI, even though he had maybe 500 at bats. Like, for him, is that the growth you would take even more than anything else? Just being more of a producer.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, there's a lot of ways to be a productive major league hitter. You know, with guys in scoring position, we can't miss those opportunities. So, but what is not measurable, and it's more instinctive. You know, it's more in our behavioral science department asking them questions. When you start doing little things like that, your confidence grows because your teammates believe in you. And when your confidence grows, it may free up to really take off. It's been out there. I think it's a good comparison. What Mike Moustakas went through in 2013 and 14, very similar things. And all of a sudden, Moose put the team ahead of himself, and he took off. The team took off, but he took off, and he hit eighth for those teams.
He started bunting down the third baseline.
Exactly.
It was like a whole thing. Yeah.
And they were things that we couldn't get him to do in the minor leagues because he was all about driving the ball somewhere. And all of a sudden he started doing the little things, and then he did drive a ball, you know, and hit some big. I think he had five home runs in the playoffs in 14.
Yeah.
That was the year he was sent down, you know. So there are moments, things that can happen in a game that give a guy confidence to become the hitter that they are certainly able to become. And MJ's one of those guys. Again, Mike Hell's one of those guys.
What about this division? I think we always ask you here on opening day. You guys have your internal projections, obviously. It sure looks like this is going to be three teams made it last year to the postseason. Looks like another really close division.
Yeah.
You guys don't seem like there's much separation.
No, we don't. It's going to be a dogfight. There's good teams in our division. Obviously the four and the White Sox are going to be better. You know, they are going to be better. But the other four, you know, they have different strengths. But we're going to be competing with all four of those teams. I think Minnesota's the team that, you know, went through some injuries last year. If they stay healthy, they've got a really good team on paper. Cleveland's always been tough. And Detroit, you know, the run they went through, I loved watching them play last year. Not necessarily against us, but they took it to us. They came in here and swept us.
They did that to the league for the last couple of months.
They did. And that momentum's going to carry, too. And they're a good ball club. So it's not going to be easy by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, we feel like we're built well. We're built for the long haul. And we have some reinforcements in AAA. We like our depth, so we're in a good spot, but now we just got to take it day by day.
You're wearing the World Series ring, so I'll ask about the confidence level and the difference, like, kind of like back to the beginning of the conversation, the optimism. How big of a difference does it make for some of the guys, do you think, attitude wise or what do you see different in the now that they know they can win department? We saw a huge shift from 14 to 15 in the clubhouse. I think even just from covering it from a media end. Are you seeing that in this team?
Without question. Our spring training was flawless. Like, there was not a bump in the road. And I want to knock on wood here. I hope this is wood. But I want to knock on wood.
It might be plastic.
We'll go with wood. Yeah.
But there was no drama. There's just a professionalism about our clubhouse that is really enjoyable to sit back and just watch. You know, it's a testament to our player development department. It's a testament to our scouts. We got the right guys in the clubhouse. And we just need to keep encouraging them, stay out of the way, let them play the game. But there is a confidence that they have. They're hungry. You know, they're hungry to go out and get back and do better than we did last year.
Small question, I guess, outside of this. But when you see the deals for, like, the contract numbers that Vlad Guerrero's asking or what Soto got, are you guys really extra thankful you got Bobby Witt Jr. done?
Well, regardless of that, we're thankful.
Yeah. You know what? No matter the money, you're happy Bobby Witt Jr. is here, sure.
Yeah, no doubt. And we're really grateful that Bobby loves Kansas City. You know, his family's in Texas. It's easy for them to get here. He's a superstar. And we know we have him through the 2030 season and hopefully years beyond that. So it is a really comfortable feeling, and, you know, Bobby's going to make money. He's going to continue to make money. But the beautiful thing about Bobby, that's not what he's about. You know, he's about playing baseball, and that's what's so enjoyable about watching him play.
JJ Piccolo, Royals General Manager, Executive Vice President. We'll let you get back inside here. We appreciate you coming out and joining us as always on the show.
Yeah, enjoyed it. Let's have a good season.
Absolutely. All right, coming up next, we'll get to what's trending. We'll talk a little bit more about what JJ had to say there. And we'll also be joined by Brian Kenny coming up at 12:30.